staff, but also the few folks out there in the public who have returned on this really kind of, well, let's put it this way. I'm just glad that we're having the weather. It's a little cooler, a little cloudy, you know, light clouds. So it's keeping the moisture in the ground a little more from that half inch of rain that we had recently. So let's move on. And I believe we're currently at the utilities report. And I'm assuming, let me see here. I don't see Ray D'Enzo as a panelist. Maybe John may. Yeah. Oh, there he is.
I just promoted him.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
All right. Well, Ray, we're moving forward with the meeting now this morning, and we're at the utilities report. So I think it's all yours.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you very much, President Farmer. I'm pleased to give this utilities report. A lot of good things have happened, and you know, some not so good things, I guess, depending on how you look at it. But I'm just going to go through the different facilities that we have. So in the wastewater, I'm proud to report that the ECMs for the PG&E project for the power upgrades and the SCADA system and the generator. The RFP job walk happened during the month of October, and they're moving forward. They were able to answer ask some good questions, and we were able to answer some good detailed questions regarding the projects. So hopefully we'll be getting a really good bid. I'm anticipating, you know, by the end of the month here. We kind of gave them a little bit of a time extension till after Thanksgiving, so specifically for the SCADA projects, so that they will be able to give us a more accurate bid. Because the less certainties that they have, the price will always go up. So we gave them that leeway. Also, I wanted to make mention. A few months back when we cleaned the aeration basins, I showed you guys the pictures for that. I just want to report that we're still getting good results from that. We've not had any pump cleanups. There hasn't been any rag maintenance or, you know, rag foul ups of these pumps. So we've not had to replace a pump, you know, ever since. So that's good to report. Also, now moving to the collection system, our collection system maintenance guys, along with the Vactor truck, have been doing some really good work. Also, with the camera that we've had since that time as well, a lot of good work has been done. We've been locating a lot of manholes, doing a lot of manhole cleanup, doing a lot of jetting of the sewer pipes. We've actually, since this time, I can't believe it hasn't been, it seems like it's been a long time, but it's not even been a year. We've jetted over 50% of the collection system pipes in our system. So I'm proud to report that. And we've also, in October, we've also done a lot of maintenance on all of our lift stations. As reported, you know, we replaced most of the belts. One negative thing, though, is that lift station B2, there's it's only running on one pump at the moment because there's an out of date pump that went bad, and we really can't get any more replacements for it. So right now we're looking at costs of replacement and possibly rebuilding the pump that's out, but. As you can see the pictures on some of these, the things that we're finding, figure two, for example, in your packet, there's that big clog looking thing that got pulled out of one of those pumps. Those are the kind of things that that these lift station maintenance efforts are finding. So again, it's a reminder for the public not to flush down flush down rags and other stuff that shouldn't go down into our collection system. Moving on to water, couple of things. There's again, a negative thing is that there's some more leak fixes that we're having to do. One of the things that I do want to make mention is that on one of the leaks that we fixed, we did instead of fixing it as a stopgap, where in the past, like some, it would be easier to just clamp the leak and then move on because it's a quicker job to do. But over time, if you're having to install a lot of clamps on these service lines, it's best to just replace the service line from the meter to the main. And that's what our guys have been doing whenever they're finding several of these clamps over time. Also, there's been some leaks detected in some of our air vac valves. The air vacs are these valves that are installed typically on the high point of every system to release any air bubbles in the mains. Our guys have been doing some systematic replacement of these as we find problems with them. So that was also done during the month of October. Also in the month of October, our water guys did a lot of calibration with the analytical devices. Analytical devices in our production wells that measure the chlorine residuals, and also the turbidity. I'm forgetting that word. So a lot of that was done, and also some of the software that needed to be upgraded was also upgraded during the month of October. As far as well levels are concerned, it is a little bit cause for concern because we were trending a little bit above average for the few months leading up to this month. Now we're kind of like hovering right around average, and we might be trending downward a little bit below average. But next month's report hopefully we'll have a better picture of where that well level number is going. But right now we're still right at average, but hopefully there's going to be more rains that'll keep coming during this winter season. So I just wanted to make you all know that. As far as the SWF efforts, in October we did we finally were able to do the audit, which we were talking about for several months prior to that, but it kept on getting postponed due to COVID because the consultants that do the audit was out of state, so they were able to perform the audit on the micro filtration system, and also they were able to do a complete inspection on that, and also did what's called a CIP, a clean in place, not the CIP, you know, capital improvement plan, but a clean in place of the system. So they did a complete audit of our system, and they found that that everything was in good working order. There were some things, minor maintenance things that needed to be replaced during that effort, you know, such as there was some gaskets and things that needed to be replaced, which is common for machinery like that. But they were able to find that all of the pipes and pumps and VFDs were all in good working order and are operational. So it's, you know, if we're ever in a stage 3 emergency, we're able to get that up and running in quick time. And I also wanted to make mention that one of the tech talk topics that I mentioned in here was we always talk about VFDs, which is, you know, stands for variable frequency drives. And why do we keep talking about that in whenever we do any upgrades? And the reason why is because it saves us a lot of money, you know, just quite frankly, it saves us money in electrical costs, because what it means when you vary the frequency in any pump motor, If you vary it by a small percentage, you're actually reducing the power savings significantly, because it's a cube root of savings. So when you're reducing something, you're reducing it by a power of 3 on the power side. So so I give a little just a brief conversation about that. So just in case, you know, whenever we talk about VFDs, we talk about it like, you know, everyone knows what we're talking about. So hopefully that'll give a little bit of shine the light on that a little bit. Couple of last things. We're continuing to work on the financing for, you know, for the PG&E projects. I'm anticipating getting all of the fixed firm price costs for that, hopefully by the end of September, by the end of November here. And we're also working on the financing end. So, our group, Pam and us and a lot of the guys at PG&E were working this to get that RFP for the financing going. But hopefully we'll be able to give more details on that next month as well. Couple of last things regarding the heading under conservation. We're still moving forward with the developing our water supply and demand modeling in view of the urban water management plan. Even though that effort is not due till next July, we're starting to look at all of those numbers and updating our model in view of the data that we're going to need for that effort come next year, early next year. So we have we're working not only with our WSC consultant group, but we also have Gus Yates is also our contract hydrologist that that has done modeling for us, that's well familiar with our system and is helping us with that effort as well. Also wanted to highlight that, you know, we are, you know, part of what Melissa and Megan, you know, that has just started here. They're doing a lot of good things as far as our business process automation, where we're hoping to streamline a lot of the process for the will serves, the contracts approval, form processing, assignments, transfers, voluntary lot mergers, all of these things, retrofit verifications. We're using an existing program that called LaserFiche, and a lot of good work has gone forward because of those efforts. And I want to applaud Melissa and Megan for all of those efforts. So, and also, as you can see, I at the end of the report, there's we have all listed all the regulatory reports that we submitted, no notices of violation, and also in your packet, we have all of the charts and the production numbers as well, and they're also available online as well if you're if there's any updated information on that. But right now, all that information in your packet is updated. And I think that is the end of my report, but I am available for any questions for anything else.
Well, I know we have at least one member of the public that wishes to make a comment, but we have a couple of directors as well. So let's first go to Director Pearson. Dave?
Yes, good morning, President Farmer. Ray, no statistics this time on fire hydrants. Can you give us an update on that? I think your report should include how many you did per month and how we are doing as far as getting them all checked out. I know you guys were making great progress, but I hope you haven't had to stop on that.
Yeah. All these papers. I thought I had it on the, but yeah, here it is. If there's no fire hydrants on that spreadsheet under the water heading, I do know that Jim has told me recently that we do an average of 60 of those per month. But I don't think, the other thing too is we do, I will put them all on the spreadsheet. I'll include them in the spreadsheet for the next board meeting. That's a good idea. I think it's a good idea to let the public know that we're doing that work, even though I haven't put it there, you know, ever since, but we are doing about 60 of those a month. But we also did a lot of leak repair in October as well. So that may have slowed down a little bit.
Okay. Thanks, Ray.
Thank you, David. Director Rice?
So I just had a question, one about the clean in place. There was discussion when there were problems with the pond because of the chemicals that and constituents that end up in the brine following clean in place. Is that the best thing to be doing? Are we needing new membranes? Are we on a program? Or is it just that we take them out and they can clean them and then bring them back so we don't have that waste product?
Yeah, so in the past there was an issue with boron, but right now we've changed the cleaning agent and no boron is used as a result of that. Yeah.
Okay, that's great. So and is the operations manual going to need to be updated as a result of the audit that just came by?
We're always looking we always update that, and it is in progress. Yes.
Okay, that's great, because I know that was one of the things the regional board had mentioned when we were in meetings about the pond overflow, and on the automating of the processes, there's a few processes that the. It might be good to bring forward what those specific processes are for the board to consider so that they know what those are, not so they can redo them, but so because there may be a point at which the board wants to say, we want to have approval if they're going to take an active meter, like they're doing a tear down and they're going to move it to a different property. Those we want to come before the board versus everybody that just changes the ownership of what waitlist position. Maybe that's not something the board would want to have a say over. And then so having that list of what are the things that are administrative processes right now, so the board can consider whether any of those would be appropriate to come before the board.
Okay, I guess.
I mean, it's just the rest of the board may not feel that way. It's just a suggestion, you know.
Yeah. Okay. So for clarity, we're not changing any of the process. We're just automating the process
right.
that already exists. And quite frankly, it's this is one of the positive outcomes of COVID, actually, if there's any, because the whole signatures and approvals, even approvals interagency. Mm-hmm. All of that we're starting to be able to automate, but we're not skipping anything, and we're
right.
not, you know, it's just we're just automating the processes that already exist, and if anything that do need to go to the board, no, all of that will not be bypassed.
Oh no, I don't. That's not what I'm suggesting. I'm suggesting that there may be cases where currently the process is administrative and ministerial and doesn't come to the board, but the board may want to change the fact that it doesn't come to the board. Like, for example, if there's a tear down and the meters move to a different location. It's just one example. I don't even know if it's a good example, and I don't know if the future board will want to do that. I'm just interested in finding out so that we don't have any miscommunications about what's supposed to come to the board and what's totally fine to be ministerial, because I don't think that the board has ever really clearly looked at that. You know, but just my take going forward. Thank you for your report. I appreciate the information.
All right. Thank you, Amanda. Director Howell has a question or a comment, and then I see that we have three members of the community that wish to speak. And so let's go to Director Howell, and then we'll hear from the folks out there in the audience. Don?
Thank you. Just very brief. I did want to second what Director Rice said. Just a simple inventory of current administrative processes might be useful for us. Not to say that anything should be done differently necessarily, but actually what I really wanted to say was I really like the tech talk topic, and please have more of those. The more you can tell us about the workings of the system, I don't know how others feel, but I really want to know, you know, and your explanations are always excellent and clear. So please continue with that. I just wanted to give you a pat on the back for that. I really liked it, and I want to see more of that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Don. So Osana, if we could go to the folks out in the public that wish to comment, go right ahead.
Yes, and I also have one to read. Would you like to first talk to the public?
Yeah, let's actually go ahead, since you probably had that one to read beforehand. So let's go ahead and hear that one first, and
then go to the public. Get it right now. Yes, this one is from Christine Heinrichs. So for the 7C, the Hadean permit application is essentially identical to the application A3/19-0199, which was appealed to the Coastal Commission in 2019 by Coastal Commissioners Linda Escalante and Katie Rice, and denied by unanimous vote of the Commission. This application claims a grandfathered water meter, but as the Commission ruled in 2019, no grandfathered projects remain unconstructed. Even if any grandfathered projects still existed, the purpose of allowing them to continue through the process relied on equity and fairness because the projects had gone so far in the process. Since it has been almost 20 years that the applicant has been aware of the building moratorium, those issues have lost their meaning. Please read the entire staff report, which I will send to you, on the previous Hadean permit regarding the district's responsibility and the role of the county in issuing this permit. I asked the board to direct staff to deny approval of this permit. Coastal Commission staff member Brian O'Neill has spoken to the applicant and informed him and the county to expect that this permit will also be denied by the commission. The district's approval of these permits is troublesome for the Coastal Commission. These approvals create work for the commission staff, which is already under mandatory furloughs and has taken a pay cut due to the COVID pandemic. The permits require staff time and effort, and the district well knows that they will not be approved. I asked the board to take action today to stop approving these applications. I hope the board will not require the Coastal Commission to approach our state legislators for relief or to take less formal action. As one commissioner suggested, to put up a billboard saying, "Don't believe these people." Christine Heinrichs.
All right, thank you, Osana. So let's move now to the folks out in the audience.
Yes, Tina Dickinson. Go ahead.
Thank you, Osana. Thank you, President Farmer. Once again, I find that the utility manager's report is totally inadequate. When are we going to hear a comprehensive report on the in-stream flow study, on the CDP, on the requirements of the hold letter from the county? I was in touch with Mr. Choi and got a response from him on November 9th saying that there has been they have not received a response from the district yet. However, they realize that the district is working with other agencies to confirm the scope of work regarding the in-stream flow study. The 90 days has already passed. I don't know if Mr. D'Anzo has made a request for an extension for the 90 days, but what on earth has been accomplished within the first 90 days? We have not been hearing anything. Because of the lack of transparency and information forthcoming, both from Mr. D'Anzo and what about the ad hoc committee, that this is their last meeting for the CDP, we haven't even had a report from you folks. Nothing. So I made it, I put in a public record request to staff at Coastal Commission for all communication between the CCSD and primarily Mr. D'Enzo and agencies. I noticed, however, that Mr. Weigel, the general manager, is not even included on a number of those communications. But I am going to send the entire board everything that I've received as of November 9th, because it is very, very troubling. You are not finding out what is actually going on. No, you may smile, Director Pearson, but it's true. They have, they, you may know, but the board does not know. And Mr. D'Enzo is not giving us updated information on the most important thing, but yet we're going after, we've hired someone to streamline will serves. Are you kidding me? Get your act together. And I hope the new board will address this much more completely and with adequate information, because we are being blindsided. But I can assure you the information I'm going to send all of you, you will be a little bit more informed and kept up to date on what is actually going on. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Tina. The next speaker, Osana.
Yes. Karen Dean, go ahead.
Good morning. I just wanted to ask if we could get an update on the CDP process and the data that we needed to get to proceed, and if we have asked for an extension. That's it. I was expecting a report today on the CDP, so if you don't mind, thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Next speaker, Osana.
Yes, Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you very much, Osana and Mr. President. I begin my remarks only with a word from the world, and that is that I found a dead baby sea otter this morning on the beach, and in the past 3 weeks have found a dead adult female sea otter and a dead adult male sea otter. So I come to you not with a smile on my face, particularly given what's happening in the world. I also listened to the end of the Board of Supervisors discussion this morning about raising the amount to $25,000 so that more rich people can participate in that process of electing officials. So I come to you with my gratitude to Christine this morning for what she said about the Haitian alleged new SFR using the alleged grandfathered meter. As you know from reading your agenda today, I requested with a PRR the documents to explain how Council Carmel referred to my remarks back on the 10th of November. So that real clarity is needed about what a will serve is and an intent to serve in the and a grandfathered meter in the judgment of this board of directors. I would like in this report, and I thank certainly Mr. D'Enzo for his explanation of another tech point. It really is helpful to understand in more specific detail how the work is being done. But I would appreciate if sometime in a near monthly report, we could find out exactly who the members of the consulting team are for the urban water management plan, because the reference is made to the consulting team, but no specification anymore, or reminder perhaps would be a better word, of who the members are. And it's in addition to the staff. So who is working on this would be very helpful. I would also like to know whether you have hired Mr. Yates to provide an updated model of the one that he used in 2014. He has repeatedly used models for edification of you board. And I would like to know whether that means that there was a lack of specificity or what the problem was with the model that was used before by him in his work consulting for you, and especially in the determination about the aquifer content back in 2014-15. I want to say that I appreciate the questions that have been brought by the directors always. I realize that at sometimes I get, and I'm going to be very candid, I get sort of tired and, to put it like I was taught never to say, sort of pissed off at things. And I want, if an apology is due to you for any lack of respect, I certainly send that apology along to you. But I also want to make clear that I will have no intention of resisting the temptation to speak when I find something is inadequate, something is very badly done, or indeed something is excellent. And I will continue that if my health is willing. Thank you very much for your public service board and staff. And I look forward to how we continue through COVID-19 pandemic. Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth. I see that we have two members of staff that wish to speak. One board member and once, well, our general manager, excuse me. So, Mr. Weigold, you have a comment for the folks that have just spoken?
I was just going to add that we have a full CDP update as part of the CDP ad hoc today.
And obviously that's going to be a little bit later on in this meeting.
That's correct.
Okay. Director Rice, thank you.
That is precisely what I was going to say. We are going to be talking about the CDP during the ad hoc committee reports, and Ray may contribute at that point, but that's when we're covering it. So it is going to be covered today. And I'm not sure what Ms. Dickinson was referring to when she talked about will serves. So maybe it's not, I don't think there's any will serves out there. And I think there's some other things that I'll discuss when we get to the ad hoc CDP report thing.
All right. Any other members of the board wish to comment on this? Okay, well, I'm just going to make a couple of brief statements here. First, it's really good to hear about the ongoing movement with regard to the PG&E SST program, not just the engineering improvements that are taking place, but also moving forward with the financing of the project. Also, it's good to hear about the, like I say, the improvements at wastewater and in the collection system. I just wanted to ask you, Ray, because you were talking about the problem you're having at lift station B2. If you could just remind us the location of that lift station, please. Ray? Well, maybe Ray has stepped away for just a moment. So also, I just, I'm hoping that maybe since Mr. Yates's name comes up occasionally in public comment, that maybe we can get a report. Oh, there's Ray, right? No, it's Tim. So perhaps we can get a verbal report from Mr. Yates sometime early next year to give us some understanding of what's going on, especially with regard to the urban water and other issues, especially right here, water shortage contingency plan. Also, it would be, let me just see, Ray, are you there?
Yeah, I apologize.
It's no problem. So I'm just making a couple of comments here. Also, the speakers have just commented on with regard to the CDP, which I know is going to be coming up in the ad hoc committee report. It'd be nice to know how long before this process, since we're getting an extension now, how long you would anticipate this process continuing with regard to the in-stream flow study and everything else that we need to deal with regard to county planning. And also with regard to Ms. Heinrich's comment, and also I believe Ms. Bettenhausen, with regard to the new single family residence with regard to the grandfather water meter at Haiti, and you know, we've already sent this to the Coastal Commission. And I just want to say I'm really reluctant in moving this forward. You know, it's already created a problem at Coastal in the past. And right now we're not, let's just say our relationship with Coastal is anything but satisfactory. And we want to do something to, how can we say it, improve the situation. And I don't think this would do that. So,
President Farmer.
Yes, Director Rice.
I just wanted to, we don't have any say over the Haitian situation. Everything was done the way that it was supposed to be done. It doesn't come back to us. I don't know what the current policy is in a situation where there's a project that gets denied and then there's another project that gets presented to county planning. It never came back to us as far as I know. And by us, I mean our staff. I don't think it came back to us for another approval. They already had the letter. So maybe there's a situation, maybe there's something that we need to clarify, as in, if you take this intent to serve letter or this will serve letter, this grandfathered meter, and you get a project all the way to the end and it gets denied, it doesn't apply to a new project on that same site, or at least it has to come back to the board or something like that. But we don't have any, this is all past our decision-making authority because the person has the required letters from the district from years ago. And I hope that none of that was incorrect, Mr. Carmel. Please correct if there was anything that was not true about that. But I don't think we have anything that we could do about this. We're no longer, we're past that point. I agree with you, President Farmer, that yes, it doesn't look good, but we are beyond a point where we could have made the decision, like, by at least a couple of years, probably, because it didn't come back to us. So while I totally share your concern, at this point, it is not in our hands anymore. And I don't know that there would be any tactic that we could use to prevent it from going forward from where it is, because it's not within our scope of authority. So I understand your concern, but we just have to, going forward, try and keep a sharper eye, because this has been on our list of existing commitments for years.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Director Rice. And I appreciate you filling us in on that. And just another reason that we're going to miss having you on the board. So, Mr. Carmel, can you follow up on what Ms. Director Rice's concerns were there? Is there anything in the future that the district can do, that the board can do, to address issues such as this that will be, like I said, that will be different than the way we do things now?
I think we evaluate each one on a case-by-case basis and be very careful. Each one has to be evaluated separately because the backgrounds are entirely different in some cases. Haitian came out of the Lemur Tract, and as you know, we have a settlement agreement involving the Lemur Tract. So that has to be evaluated in the context of that settlement agreement. But I don't think that's coming back. I think what Director Rice indicated is correct.
All right. Well, thank you both. Thank you both for your comments on that. I don't see any more comments from the audience or from members of staff or the board. So I just want to make one final remark, and then we'll move on to various board member and committee and liaison reports. Vice President Steidel, you wish to make a comment?
Well, I was just wondering, you had asked Mr. Danza to return because you had a question for him regarding where the location of Licitation B2 was.
Well, thank you.
It's on the corner of Wood and Eaton.
The Wood and Eaton. Yeah, that's been a bit problematic for a while, that location and the person that lives there complaining about it and that type of thing. Well, hopefully that'll be. Isn't that the one that we were thinking about, like moving across the street or something like that? Am I wrong there?
Yeah, when Bob Gresson discussed that before my time, yes.
Okay, all right. So I just want to follow up on one more thing you said, Ray. You were talking about the well levels, and I think I might have mentioned this yesterday. The well levels at about an average right now. And I think one of the reasons that the well levels, I just want to refreshing my memory, last year, and I commented, I hope nobody minds it, I just revisit what I said yesterday, that we last year we got 4 inches of rain in November, 4 inches of rain in December. So we had already had 10 inches of rain by the end of the year. And then we only had an inch of rain in January and February, but then we had some significant enough rain in March and April that the well levels stayed pretty high, even though we had less than average rain. So I'm just commenting on the fact that what we've had so far now is less than an inch of rain. And, you know, here we are moving towards the end of November. Who knows what we're going to have in December. So I just want to encourage the residents out there, since water usage is, as can be seen in the report here that Ray has given us with regard to water usage, that I just want to encourage the members of our community, since water usage has slowly been creeping back up since the major efforts we made at conservation a few years ago, if people would just take into consideration, start using a little bit less water in one fashion or another, get back to some of those previous habits, because we really don't know what's on the horizon, not just this rain season, but in years coming. So I just want to comment on that. Yes, Director Steidel, did you wish to make another remark?
Oh, I'm sorry. I hadn't lowered my hand. No, I apologize.
No need to apologize. Okay, let's move on to item number 8, board member committee and liaison reports. And I'm going to save mine until the end. Vice President Steidel, do you have a report from the Finance Committee? Need to unmute yourself?
I'm afraid I have a habit of going up to my window and trying to unclick the or unmute from that point. The last meeting of the Finance Committee actually was in review of the first quarter budget report that came forward to you. And so there probably isn't anything additionally to consider for that. And then we have a Finance Committee meeting coming up. And I'm going to look at my calendar just to make sure I don't misstate it in any way, which is on Tuesday the 24th. And we have several items that we'll be discussing at the meeting at that time. I believe the agenda for the meeting has already been posted out on the website. So if there are members of the community who are interested and would like to take a look at that and potentially join us at the meeting for the discussion points that we're going to have. And that would do it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Vice President Steidel. And folks can just go to the district website and go to board meetings and go to the Finance Committee meeting and get the Zoom link and attend the meeting that way, right?
Correct.
Well, thank you. Director Rice, you wish to make a comment?
Thank you, President Farmer. I just wanted to thank Vice President Steidel for the hard work that she's done as the inaugural chair of the Finance Committee. I when I started on this board, we had a very different financial outlook for things, and the way that things were being done needed to change. And I feel confident that as inaugural chair of the Finance Committee, you've really set a good pattern for moving forward to keep our finances in much better shape. So thank you so much for doing that for the community and for the board.
Thank you, Director Rice. I will have to say that two things. One is we are driven by a very strong group of community volunteers on that committee who provide a lot of insight and a lot of business experience. And the other piece is the strength of the finance manager that we have in place that helped lead us through some new processes and establish a lot of normal financial constraints that maybe hadn't been in place before. But I also want to mention in passing, as he's not going to be a board member beyond a very short period here, is that actually Director Pearson was the inaugural
My fault. The Director Pearson, I'm sorry.
And so I just wanted to mention that because actually there were a number of people that were on that committee that continued forward and that institutional knowledge and the directions that Director Pearson set in that initially, I think, were also key in its formulation. So thank you.
I am so sorry, Director Pearson. I thought that Cindy was the first chair. My fault. I'm glad that we do finally have a finance committee that's a standing committee. Thank you, President Farmer.
I just want to give two thumbs up to the comments that have been made by Director Rice and Vice President Steidel. It's we're very fortunate. I mean, these standing committees that we have mainly made a major contribution to the functioning of the board in the district. And thank you all for your efforts, especially the volunteers in the community that have stepped up and donated their time and their energy and their expertise. All right, moving forward, do we have a report, Director Howell, from the Policy Committee?
Yes, very brief. I had promised to bring the board back the a replacement policy for replacing directors. However, when I was going in to correct what I saw to be an oversight on my part, I discovered there was some other inconsistencies. So it's really not quite ready for public consumption yet. So it will have to wait and come before the new board. I anticipate that within the next very short period of time. But basically, the revision that I was hoping to make, as soon as I started to make it, I could see that there was something left out. And it's very interesting, these policies, as we work through them, and this is not the first time where something that seems rather simple, as you dig more deeply, the ramifications start developing. The grants policy that we were just discussing yesterday, for example, or the one regarding the changes to transfer development credits, which looked like a simple change of a word here or there, has huge implications. So I beg the board's patience on this, and that we will get it back, and hopefully within a month or so. So my apologies on that one. There's a couple of one thing that was passed by our present our last committee meeting, but I don't think it's really ready to come to you yet. So I'm not going to take your time. I'll just allude to it. We do have a report and recommendation regarding street lighting and outdoor lighting on CCSD property. However, it's I need to have it agendized so that the board can actually discuss it. I could tell you what we said, but it would be a waste of your time at this point. So that will be coming up. I'll have to devise a way to get it so that we can report it out to you with an opportunity for the board to actually take an action. In this case, the action would be to instruct the policy committee to go forward or not to go forward. But that requires a motion and it requires agendizing as a discussion and consideration item. So I'll just tease you a little bit with the thought that that's coming forward probably within, I would imagine perhaps in our first meeting in January, perhaps. We're having a policy committee meeting today, actually, as soon as we get done with this one. So I would just let you know what's on our agenda for tomorrow or today. We are bringing back the discussion of the district's purchasing policy, but most specifically, the item which caused the policy to be brought before us originally, which was simply having to do with the purchase of used equipment. So I'm asking the committee to discuss that matter and see if there's any kind of a policy that could be arrived at fairly quickly on that one. We will also have a discussion and consideration regarding policies about people experiencing homelessness. I don't know where any of this is going to go. I've just left it up to the committee members to do the hard work. So I'm looking forward to seeing what's brought back to us later on today. And then the other is a discussion and consideration regarding answering correspondence to the board. If you'll recall, we've already, there was a policy that came from us earlier on regarding correspondence to the board, and the issue then became, well, what do we do about answering that correspondence, or if there is anything to be done? And if I may, and if you would indulge me, well, I'll come back to that one in a minute. I mean, I'll finish my report, but we have hopes to, I don't know where we're going to get on that, but it's kind of an open question, but we will be discussing that. Just to let you know what's on our future agendas right now, which is of course subject to change based upon board direction, is that in our December meeting, we're anticipating discussing and consideration of the use of surveillance cameras on district property. That's something that had been asked for by Director Rice specifically. And we will be dealing with the grants policy and beefing that up based upon input from the boards from your last meeting. So we will be dealing with that in December and hopefully be able to bring that to you to the board in January. And as to the January meeting so far, and this of course could change immensely, I don't have much on here at the moment. I'm not even going to burden you with that. I don't know what's going to be up in January. After today, once the committee meets, then perhaps we will. So let me conclude this report with just one thing, which if I can ask your indulgence for just a quick minute, having to do with the issue of responding, board members responding to correspondence addressed. Well, there's two issues, correspondence addressed to the entire board and correspondence addressed to a board member as an individual. I had been asked, and I've only done this with a couple of you, try to survey you as to how you handle correspondence that comes to you. I would just like to hear since the committee is going to meet in a few hours, if any of you have any message to the committee regarding this issue, this might be a good time to mention that. I think it's not out of order for you to do that. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I would invite any, as I've already talked to Director Steidel and Director Farmer about this issue, does anyone else have any observations or anything that you wish to say about this whole issue of answering correspondence, either to yourself as an individual or as a correspondence to the entire board? Do you have anything you wish to pass on to the committee today? Okay, don't all speak at once.
Amanda has a comment.
So stuff that's, if there's something that comes to the whole board and doesn't come to the GM, it seems like, and I think our bylaws might even say this, or they did at one point, that the president speaks for the board. I think having some way that the rest of the board knows the correspondence that went out. And it seems to me if something is sent to the board, I know, so some other districts in their board packets, if something comes from another agency to the GM and it's CC'd to the board, like on paper or whatever, they just include it as part of the agenda packet. And that wouldn't be all correspondence and definitely not all emails, but it seems to me that if there's interagency contact going on, the board should be at least aware. But I don't know how that gets implemented without causing a massive dump of records, which we don't want to do, because things change and evolve through time. So, but like the official letters that come from Coastal, whether they're email or RCB, you know, they could come from any interagency. It seems to me, especially if there's a concern or a question that needs to be answered, but. Individual directors, those are to individuals. And I think board members just need to be conscious of not undermining decisions that have been made by a board anyway, other than putting it onto an agenda and taking a vote on it. So if a decision's been made on something, then, you know, you toe the line forward. But into two individual directors only, if it's sent to every board member, I don't know, how do you deal with that? Maybe Tim has some thoughts on this related to public records, some guidance thoughts, maybe.
Is there a question?
Correspondence, right, between board members, or something sent to the board or the GM, like interagency correspondence?
Well, we should have a bylaw. We don't have a bylaw on that issue.
Okay.
Typically, you would pick the board president to be the spokesperson for the board for those type of correspondence.
Oh, I see. May I ask a question, Mr. Carmel, or is that all right, Mr. President Farmer? May I continue?
Sure.
One question. Again, we could go. I don't want to take a lot of time with this, but since I have you right here on the screen, some of us, I very seldom ever answer a letter from a constituent, a rate payer that's addressed to me because of possible Brown Act issues. How should a board member be concerned about communications with individual members of the public in terms of, is there danger of a Brown Act violation occurring in that context in some way? Do we need to be concerned about that?
I think you should always be concerned about it, but I don't see responding to an individual constituent as necessarily creating the fact pattern for a Brown Act violation. You know, that would involve a collective concurrence of more than two board members. And as long as you're the only one responding, I don't see a problem. Now, of course, if that letter was sent to five board members and they all responded, there could be problems, but the problems would lie with the constituent, even though they're not subject to the Brown Act. They could create issues.
So just to clarify then, so if I write something and the recipient then publishes that, what my response, say, posts it on social media or forwards it to others, the responsibility is no longer mine, and therefore it's not a possible Brown Act issue?
If all you did was respond to a constituent's letter, I think you're fine. How it's misused is another issue. But you have to be vigilant about all of these. I mean, obviously, it's better off, you're better off if you minimize your correspondence to constituents. And certainly if they're asking for, if they're asking for issues of the, or opinions of the board itself, you have no authority to answer those. And I think if you are answering anything like that, it has to be very clear that you're answering as an individual and not on behalf of the board. Most agencies have policies that prohibit directors or council members from responding on behalf of anything but themselves, and they have requirements that the letter has to say specifically that.
Thank you. That's extremely helpful. Thank you very much. And thank you all for indulging me.
All right. Director, Don, do you have anything more to say?
No, thank you. Although it looked like perhaps Director Seidel had to add.
I see your hand up there. First, I want to thank you, Don, for a very thorough policy committee report. Thank you. Vice President Seidel?
I just wanted to add, and I this may have happened in the information I relayed to you previously, Director Howell, but generally, I try to respond to correspondence from the community by thanking them for their letter and just as an acknowledgement piece of the job, and not necessarily to answer specific things. So that, as a minimum, that's something that you might want to consider individually, just to do that. And as I say, I couldn't remember whether I had mentioned that before to you when we had the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Seidel. Director Rice, you have another comment?
I think And Director Steidel can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think part of what we did for the committee when we were discussing the committee bylaws was if there's something that needs to come forward, the committee reports are when they should come forward. But I don't know, Mr. Carmel, if that means that we could, say, make a motion that we have the policy committee study the streetlights or something like that. Could we do that as part of a policy committee report, or would that have to be its own item?
That would have to be its own separate agenda item.
Okay. So
these are discussion items. They're not action items.
Okay. But he can get direction from the board like he just did, just not get a formal assigning. Cause I think that's what we talked about, how to stop the confusing what's getting assigned and what's not by putting them into a motion. So that would have, thank you. Appreciate that. Done.
All right. Thank you, Director Rice. Hassan, it appears we have a member of the community that would like to make a comment. So would you call on that person, please? Hassan?
Yes, I didn't unmute myself. I'm sorry. Tina Dickinson, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Hassan. Thank you, President Farmer. On this item, to all of you, I have reached out and communicated with senators, with both in the state legislature and senators in our federal legislature. I've written to House of Representatives, individually, and I've had letters back from Salud Carbajal and from Senator Feinstein or Senator Monning or whoever it is I've written to. Why is this such an issue with this community services district not understanding the boundaries that you as elected officials have in this CSD? I know that even I may have in the past and more recently sent information to one director on this board. The response I got was, thanks, Tina. That's it. So that person was probably playing it really safe. It wasn't a question. It was information that I provided. So I would like to hear from legal counsel. I mean, we pay you a heck of a lot of money every month to answer these questions more fully and with more clarity so that the board and the public have a better understanding of what it is we can expect or that they going forward are within their boundaries. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Tina. I know there was a question there to legal counsel. I don't know if he wishes to respond or we're just going to continue. All right. So let's move on to liaison reports and ad hoc committee reports. I know there's a number of folks that are attending the meeting today, as well as members of the board and staff who would
Resources committee?
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Director Pearson, could we have a report from the R&I committee? And thank you, Director Rice, for noting my oversight. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, President Farmer. We had a rather short meeting on the 9th. We discussed and talked about the CIP report that we were given and which you saw as part of the budget packet that was presented to us yesterday. We noted that it was still not totally up to date because the new figures on the SST work have not been received yet. And so that CIP list needs to be really updated again when that information comes in, and Mr. D'Enzo promised to do that and get us an updated copy at our next meeting. We also talked about appointing an ad hoc committee for the urban water management plan, and We decided not to do that until the new committee was formed in January, because we weren't sure what the committee looked like at that time. And we also received an update on the investment grade audit and the SST, and that was similar to the update that Mr. D'Enzo gave us earlier as a part of his report. And that's basically all I've got, unless people have questions of me.
All right, thank you, David. Any members of the board wish to comment? Yes, Vice President Steidel.
Thank you, President Farmer. Just as an aside, the updates with the CIP are entirely appropriate, and they show up in different elements of data that we review. But I'm suggesting that we need to have a revision maintenance process on that document, so that when we're looking at it, we can identify immediately if that is the most up-to-date revision of the document, because I think we're going to kind of get ourselves wrapped around the axle here, moving it back and forth a lot without that kind of indication on it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for the report, David, from R&I. So now we will move forward to a liaison and ad hoc committee reports. And I know folks, like I said, out in the audience have been waiting for the ad hoc committee report on the CDP. So if we can hear from either Director Rice or Director Pearson, go right ahead.
Okay, so I'm going to address a few of the, we had a CDP meeting yesterday. It was Mr. Carmel and Mr. Weigold and Mr. D'Enzo and I and Ms. Bland. And there are a few things that I want to just state at the outset from concerns and questions that people have raised from the public. So, what's happening right now with the information hold is and I'm also going to state, please, Mr. Carmel, if I state something that's not correct, please correct me, or Mr. Pearson or Mr. Weigold or Mr. D'Enzo. So the information hold is what happens after you submit your project description, and which is what we just recently did. This is a normal permitting process where they get the project description and then they know what kind of project they need to be expecting, and they can then list what all of the different information requirements might be. For, say, a single family residence, that is a pretty standard list. So it pretty much gets given to the person who's requesting the permit right then and there, but they're still on information hold also until they get that information in. We did not submit an incomplete application. We submitted our application. They evaluated it for any other additional things they wanted, information items that they wanted, so that they could make their staff reports and make a staff report that's the basis for a good decision making, whether it's at the Planning Commission, whether it's at the Board of Supervisors, or the Coastal Commission. So right now, our staff is working on fulfilling that information hold list. When we've talked about negotiating related to the permit, what we're talking about negotiating is a better understanding of what information items they need, why they need them, so that we can make sure that what we're doing is getting the information they actually want and not some random other thing that we think they want. So that's when we talk about negotiating with the county or coastal staff, it's usually about, so when we say they want an in-stream flow study, say with coastal, for example, which is something they've been asking for decades, and is they've been very clear about that they want an in-stream flow study. Nobody ever gave us parameters. What do you mean by an in-stream flow study? and what is it that you need from that? So when we talk about negotiations, we're talking about figuring out what they need from the in-stream flow study so we can have a good RFP for our consultants and so that Ray knows what it is that we need to do in terms of data collection to put together what the county is asking us to provide. So that's one thing. Withdrawing the application because it was incomplete is an inaccurate statement because the application process is iterative. It goes back and forth. First, you put in a project description so they know kind of what you're going to do. And then they can ask for information. Then you give them the information that, and they see maybe there might be something else that they need from you before their staff report can be complete and it can be heard. So that's the process we're in right now. And as usual, Ms. Dickison is correct, but a little impatient. And as a person who is very impatient myself, I completely understand. It is taking a long time. And as I think somebody else said earlier in this meeting, I think it was Director Howell, the more you dig in, the deeper you realize it's more and more complicated. And our staff, we have all new staff people from the staff people that were here when the thing was built, when it was in its testing phase, and then as we've gotten to now. So I think our staff has come up to speed very well based on the ad hoc committee meetings that I've been part of where coastal staff and county staff and our staff are all included. Our staff really jumped on board fast and has not been shy about saying, okay, I need to find out more about that instead of just giving an answer when they don't know. And I think that it's a learning curve for everybody. And we're at a slight disadvantage in that Mr. Weigold doesn't have local agency permitting experience or Coastal Commission experience. He hasn't been through the process before. Fortunately, Ray's been through it. He was in a slightly different role, but he participated in the Los Osos Sewer Project and its permitting. Again, different role, so he's on a learning curve too. So that's why we also have Mr. Carmel, because Mr. Carmel has been part of the ad hoc committees since way back in the days when it was Greg Sanders and Gail Robinette. Or Jim Beringer, even all the way back. So his knowledge of this process is also very valuable. And I hope that the future boards understand and will rely on his historical knowledge of how we've gotten to where we are on that. Now about the coastal and being concerned and the issues that were raised about the hearing on November 6th, I don't want to get into those in much detail, but I do want to say that those events triggered some action because, of course, I'm concerned. One of the ways I learned about CCSD was reading staff reports from Coastal Commission. They are reliable and very, very thorough. The Pine Knolls tank permit and appeal process taught me a lot about this district. The Coastal Commission has a standard narrative. They probably use it as like a template. Okay, there's a Cambria project coming through. Here's the we've all read the documents. It says the same paragraph at the top. Cambria is located on the seaside between San Simeon and San Luis Obispo County. I mean, we've all seen that narrative, right? So the Coastal Commission narrative is more lengthy. And there are some inconsistencies in the narrative that this board understands for Cambria and the narrative that the Coastal Commission staff understands for Cambria. And those things need to get ironed out so that we both have the same understanding of the narrative of Cambria. Because, and I think that Mr. Carmel and Ms. Bland and Mr. D'Enzo are going to be working on those things and in conjunction with the CDP. So even though we don't have a say once these projects go forward on like the Haiti and the Satimi, those things, and those are things we might be able to correct later on, going forward, What we need to be doing is being sure that we are cooperating and actually partnering with agencies like the county and the Coastal Commission, because their staffs, we are a small district and we have some of the best employees we've had here in years. But I will also say that the expertise that exists at the county level and at the Coastal Commission level, they are helping us ensure that that project is both as environmentally friendly, as mitigated as possible. And some of those things feel like, to some people, like they're hard to get done, but what they're doing is they're using their expertise to help us get the best, least environmentally damaging project that we can get. So when we're working through the process with all of the different things on the information hold, and maybe it would be appropriate to get a quarterly update on how the progress of that info hold list, but I think on a monthly basis, because some things just take time to do. And because of COVID, planning has also gotten delayed. So this goes back to what I was saying about impatience. It's really hard to be patient. It is taking a long time, partially due to COVID, partially due to things that are outside of our staff's control entirely. So I want to let the community know that what's happening is part of the process, and it is nothing that's trying to be held back. That we want this to get to the Planning Commission so the public can make comment on it, so we can see the staff report on it, so we know what it is that we're going to be expected as a district to do. And so we're not like dragging our feet. We're not facing obstacles that are beyond overcoming. What we're doing is we're being deliberative and careful and detailed in getting what needs to be done to ensure we all love this community. Nobody wants to wreck it and destroy the environment. Nobody. And I got concerned when I read in the staff report from the Coastal Commission that current withdrawals are damaging our environment. Well, that's not good. If that's the case, we better be looking at that. So there's a lot of moving pieces and parts, and I hope that the new board and the new CDP committee will be able to carry forward some confidence that we, Ray has really, and Melissa, they both have really picked up this project to bring it as far as it's come. I know it feels like a long time, and it is a long time. I don't know if I had any other. One of the things I recommend this board needs to do concurrently with the CDP process is definitely need to be creating an info hold list of our own, essentially. What are the things that we need to do to be comfortable that when the CDP is permitted, we're not overspending, overusing the SWF, you know, issuing permits left or right, which we don't issue permits, but, you know, giving out will serves left and right. There's a lot of steps that need to be taken, and urban water management plan is one of them, figuring out our water supply and demand, and then having a management plan for how do we manage our water resource we have. And that's what we're trying. All of that is the big picture of it, with the reality that as some people have suggested, we withdraw our application because it was not complete, we will just go back and we will submit essentially the same thing and get another info hold and start through the process again without any change to the project description, without any change to the, because then we have to go back to the EIR. Now I'm getting into the weeds, so I'm going to stop there, and I want to toss it to David and Ray if they have additional comments that I may have left out.
Yeah, I don't have anything at this time. Ray, you might want to just briefly state where you're at with the letter and stuff.
Yeah, I'd be glad to. It's actually going to be, it might seem a little lengthy, but I'll go ahead and and outline where we are and a little bit of where we've been relating to this issue. So the what everyone's been asking about is did we submit a response to the info hold? And the answer is yes, we submitted it on November 12th. The responses and the specific documents, our responses basically consisted of citing sections of and referencing specific documents that are already existing, like the SEIR, for example. And we addressed all of these issues as best as we could. So that's what our responses consisted of. So we submitted that on November 12th. And at the same time, we also requested a time extension. We specifically asked for 120 days because I think this would give us appropriate time to properly scope and complete a portion of the in-stream flow study. I'm not going to mention any dates this time, but anyway, I'm optimistic still that we can get the information that we need in that amount of time. To reiterate what Director Rice said, submitting a permit application and getting these responses through the info hold, which is common for these discretionary permitted processing, is that we now have a good standard of review from which to respond to these issues. So I think it's so the fact that all of these came to light is good. So mainly, the in-stream flow study is the bulk of the response that still needs to be completed. And I want to give a couple of details relating to that. So first of all, I wanted to clarify this August prediction that I made back in May. I want to just state up front that it wasn't meant to deceive or be underhanded or anything like that, because I believed what I said at the time, and quite frankly, I still believed it if my assumptions were correct, which is the mistake that I made. But I made the statement based on assumptions that we would perform the study while operating the SWF for a couple of months. What I didn't foresee and was that we would not get an exemption to do this under a current permit. That was my mistake Coastal and the regional board was not going to give us an exemption to do this, to run the plant. So in addition, we pursued the possibility of actually as an alternative to doing to running the plant. We explored the possibility at that time of doing an extended pumping test in place of running the SWF. We're going to do the pumping test. So we discussed this idea with the regional board, and they had some initial concerns, and they actually ran it up with their management, and it was possible, but the permit hoops that we would need to go through made it infeasible, especially with the time frame that with which we were to do it. So it was possible, but still infeasible, and when we had a follow-up meeting with Coastal Commission, they made it very clear that they did not want a pump test to be part of the in-stream flow study. Hence, the August deadline urgency went away. So at that time, I believe the August deadline was appropriate if we were required to run the SWF or an extended pumping test. My mistake was assuming that Coastal wanted this, but it turned out they didn't after all. And I also wanted to reiterate that the reason why I proposed the August timeframe is August would have represented a time when the San Simeon Creek would be in the height of its dry season. That was why I proposed it at that time. But it turns out that since Coastal didn't even want that, then I dropped it. I was actually approaching it from an engineering standpoint where Coastal was more focused on more environmental focus, even though I believe that hydrology and environmental would have been helpful for this project. And because of that, that took the that August timeframe out of the, you know, out of the running. We were already doing the adaptive management plan environmental studies as directed by the CDP ad hoc, and we started doing that back in April of 2020. Actually, this year, that's right, 2020 is still this year, and have been collecting this data twice a month ever since. So this data has been collected and will be used in the in-stream flow study report. So I guess what I'm saying, just to sum that portion up, is that even though there is no in-stream flow study that started in August, we're collecting the data that's more environmentally focused, which is what Coastal Commission is wanting anyway. So in light of specifically on the status of the in-stream flow study scope is that we are coordinating with Coastal, State Parks, California Fish and Wildlife, and the county, and we submitted an in-stream flow study scope of work. The scope of work was a 20-page document, okay? It wasn't just this one-page outline, okay? It was a 20-page initial draft. We submitted that in August, and we've had, since then, three rounds of responses to this process. So basically, we submitted that in-streams, that draft, the scope of work. Coastal would come back with some comments. We would respond to those comments, and so we've had three rounds of this, okay? And I understand there's a request for this information. I would gladly give that, okay? Just at that point, as a rule, working in public agency, I've never involved any board in staff level correspondence, and I normally involve the GM, but typically only on decision point responses relating to staff operational issues. So, but I did copy General Manager Weigel on some, but not all. I admit that, but it was only because I didn't feel there was a decision point, but it was more a correspondence on a staff level. But that being said, so we, like I mentioned, we had three rounds of these responses through the in-stream flow study scope. Lots of issues to work through. And, you know, we're wading through two decades of issues, essentially. And one of our focuses is that we don't want to commit the district to things beyond our scope. It's easy to just say, we'll do everything, and then everyone will be happy with it. Well, in reality, there's only a small portion, a portion of what we should commit the district to. So that's kind of one of the issues that I'm wading through with Coastal in this negotiation, if you will. But as far as the scope is concerned, there's two, what we propose to Coastal are two things. We have a task one that we're calling it, which is an in-stream flow study plan of the entire lower San Simeon Creek watershed. And this is a comprehensive overview of the lower San Simeon Creek basin. And we hope that this is more of a longer term interagency, regency, stakeholder collaborative effort. And we hope that this long-term scope of work would get agency collaboration with state parks, California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and even the county. And we would actually be eligible for grants to help us with this effort, because this task one overall in-stream flow study is meant to be more long-term, even several years. This obviously won't work with our permit. So that's why we also propose a task two version of the in-stream flow study. And this is right now where it's the point of issue is at the moment, because the Coastal wants us to do task one first, but in reality, task two is a more localized effort relating to SWF operations. Because in reality, what's happening in the upper watershed in San Simeon Creek is not going to affect our operations of the SWF, especially if the creek is dry during the times that we would propose to run in anyway. So I think So this is what we're, this is the part of the plan that we're proposing, is that there's a localized effort that we want to do that would, that would look at environmental impacts and hydrology, but it's more relating to the SWF operations. And I still think we can perform this within the time extension, but I'm not going to make any promises on dates. But if the Coastal Commission does agree, you know, on some version of this, I like to think that we're close to agreeing on this, then we definitely want to move forward with it. So these different scope of works, there's that task one overall effort that I mentioned, and then there's a task two localized effort that I've also mentioned that we'll be bringing to the board an RFP plan, an RFP and of the actual proposed scope of work for this effort. And if, because we would need to send this out to some consultants, you know, within the area that would actually do this work for us. To localize task two, we probably don't need to do an RFP for, but the task one definitely we do. But I don't know, it might require both. So right now the response, we recently, I believe it was just a couple of weeks ago that I sent the latest, our latest responses to the Coastal Commission. And we haven't heard back from them as far as the latest of the volley of responses, but the issues keep getting pared down. Like I said, it was like a 20-page outline originally, but it kept on getting pared down, and we were able to narrow it down to these two issues, you know, regarding the task one and task two. So I'm optimistic that I think we're close to the agreement on it. Like I said, I want to do what's fair for the district, and I at the same time have an environmentally responsible project moving forward that's gonna satisfy a lot of our stakeholders. Anyway, I meant that be in a nutshell, but it went longer than I thought. But anyway, that's the issues at hand for the in-stream flow study and info hold. But again, I'm available for any questions relating to any of it, because I understand that there's a lot of parallel processes that I probably forgot to mention.
All right. Thanks. Thanks to both you and Director Rice for a very, I would say, substantial and complete update on the CDP process. We have a couple of members of the board that wish to comment. We have a member of the public as well. So first, Director Rice, you wanted to make a follow-up?
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Thank you for that report, Mr. D'Anzo. That's very helpful. And for the rest of the board to know, it, in my opinion, is fairly complete, as the information that the CDP committee has been discussing. One of the things to be aware of is that as board members going directly to the staff, like at Coastal, isn't appropriate, but going to Coastal commissioners, going to a planning commissioner and talking to them about what you know would be the role of the president and or somebody that's appointed to be that person. I also wanted to remind folks that there were a few meetings in 2013 with San Simeon riparian landowners regarding doing a full watershed management plan for San Simeon, and that effort the meetings were held at Shirley Bianchi's, and a person who was retired from the Salinas Resource Conservation District is the one that came and explained what a watershed management plan is, yada, yada, yada. I don't know if the Resource Conservation District is on your list of possible funding opportunities, but they might be some place to look, because they've been trying to get these management plans in place all over the Central Coast. So that might be a lead for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Rice. Vice President Steidel, you wish to make a comment, and then we'll go to the public.
Thank you, President Farmer. I just wanted to suggest that Director Rice and Mr. Budanzo just gave us a masterclass. They approached the information very specifically and broke it down in pieces and made it very consumable. And I think they both did a masterful job today in being able to relate a tremendous amount of information to people. And there have been occasions over the last several months where board members in the community have commented on the value and the commitment and support that our finance manager, Ms. Duffield, has given us, which is rightfully earned and appreciated. And I just like to extend that I think that Mr. D'Anzo should be acknowledged in the same value. And in fact, I think this was an excellent demonstration of something that Director Rice referred to previously about the strength of the people that we have working in this this CCSD, this community of the district. I'm very, very impressed with what you were able to bring to us today, and I want to thank you for the extraordinary efforts. And frankly, Mr. D'Anzo, for you to keep that level of reference and demarcation to be able to deliver and to have done that as easily with the details of what pump is being traded out someplace in the district, and talking what that means and an expansion of knowledge and working knowledge and immediacy of that knowledge. I'm impressed. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Steidel. Osana, if you would bring in the member of the public that wishes to comment, please.
Yes, Tina Dickinson. Go ahead.
Thank you, Osana. Thank you, President Farmer. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you fine, Tina.
Thank you. I want to clarify one little statement that Mr. D'Anzo made, and I think it was Director Rice that said she didn't hear that, or maybe it was another director, but he did say that Melissa and Megan were in busily processing automation streamlining for will serves. That was part of his report. So I wrote it down when he said it. So I think you need to go back and see that was actually part of his report. Now, regarding this report, thank you, Mr. D'Anzo, and thank you, Director Rice, for the ad hoc committee's report. In January, it will be 7 years since this project was started. We initiated it, not started it physically, but initiated. We hired a lobbyist at great expense. I remember that lobbyist telling the district or advising them that you really need to work with coastal staff to get this accomplished. Well, he's been gone for quite a while, Mr. Flores, and we've had a turnover of people retiring, resigning, or whatever, getting fired from the district. And so we find ourselves with new people. And I've said before, I have sympathy for them to be having to take on this tremendous project and starting out from scratch with, I don't know who's giving Mr. D'Anzo, for example, his orders about what he should be doing pursuing this, because the general manager does not have the background in order to do that. So that's always kind of puzzled me. Because this has gone on for so long, and because I do pay attention, as I think most of you know, to the business of the district, I find that when I put in a PRA to an agency, whether it be State Water Board or the Regional Board or State Parks or Coastal Commission, I do get responses within a day or two. So I would like to just read a couple of paragraphs from Tom Luster to Mr. D'Anzo, to State Parks, to Melissa Bland, to folks at California Fish and Wildlife, and to Gus Yates and Cindy Cleveland. And this was October 30th. Hi, Ray and all. Thanks for the responses below. Just a couple of follow-up comments at this point. Order of tasks. The CCSD proposes to first complete task two, which is meant to identify potential environmental impacts of SWF operations. However, without completing task one, which would identify whether there is water available for the SWF, and if so, how much? It doesn't seem likely that task two would have a valid basis for proposing how the SWF would operate, what timing and volume restrictions it might have, etc. Completing the in-stream flow study appears to be a necessary step before successfully accomplishing task two. Pump test. This is the second item. What specific criteria will be applied to ensure the pump test doesn't result in intake of listed species or adversely affect stream or riparian resources? Given the relatively high hydraulic conductivity in the area, a pump test of any large scale or long duration could cause problems. And I will say that Mr. D'Anza responded on November 9th to these comments that Mr. Luster had, and quite extensively so, including a pump test that Mr. Warren had wanted to do, but I talked to Mr. Warren. He was just here recently. I think that's off the table. That was going to be done through the county or something with Mr. Warren. But if I'm right in believing that to be the case, maybe you can confirm that, Mr. D'Anza. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tina. Director Rice, you wish to make a comment?
So I just, first thing, with the email, I think the parts that were read were pretty well summarized by Mr. D'Anza in his report. It was just a more detailed situation. And you notice the CC on that email, and from what I've seen, when there's emails that come from Tom Luster, who's staff at Coastal, it goes to our staff, not to our board. That also means it doesn't go to Coastal commissioners either. This is the staff doing the heavy lifting of putting all the information together for the decision makers, i.e. you and me and the commissioners. They're trying to get all the information so that the commissioners or the Board of Supervisors or the Planning Commission can make a good decision based on good information. So the all of these ins and outs, one of the reasons why it might seem harder to get documents from the district is that a lot of these things are still in process, as Ray talked about on the pump test, that we've let that go. So that email is actually kind of like Director Pearson was saying, or Director Steidel, I think, about making sure there's a notation on the CIP so it's obvious where we are. Well, emails are much more ephemeral. So not have, you know, that's outdated information probably shortly after that email was received, because this is a moving target. So I just wanted to state that. And I do think that this is, in addition to supervising two departments of the district, Mr. D'Anza has taken on something that is very complicated. And I think he's done a great, great job with that. The other thing to note, if you were listening while he was talking about the way we were negotiating on the in-stream flow studies and the various things, if we had still had Mr. Flores on board, we would have expected somebody that's advocating for the district to be part of that meeting and to have an understanding of which things might be overdoing versus underdoing, and may have a middle path because they've done this kind of work before with Coastal staff in these kinds of negotiations. So I'm just going to put that forward once again for the three members of the board that are continuing, that having an advocate that can help our staff coordinate with the staffs of multiple other agencies required to do this permitting might be helpful. Right now, a lot of that's landing on Ray's shoulders and on Tim's shoulders. So thank you.
Thank you, Director Rice. any other members of the board wish to comment? Any follow-up from Mr. D'Anzo? All right, well, seeing none, we'll move on further. Is there somebody want to refresh my memory? Are there any other ad hoc committees that we need to hear from right now? Director Howell, Director Vice President Steidel?
Well, Director Howell and I would be reporting on the affordable housing program ad hoc. And we had actually a meeting with Mr. D'Anzo and Ms. Bland earlier today, because there's a lot of activity that is actually going on right at the county level. There is a county housing element that is currently part of a review at the county, and there's a sorting process related to that and defining some specifics in terms of how the county approaches its affordable housing program and being able to support the things that have been identified at the state level as well as other directives that they've received. And needless to say, with that, then the county is getting a definition of what affordable housing is in the county, and it's instigated a communication between SLO Planning and CCSD, and they're currently in kind of an iterative and collaborative process to understand how some of those flow down effects would be handled within the Cambria community, because although there are affordable housing projects all over the county, of course, Cambria has to be different than just about any other place that resides in the county as far as even this affordable housing. So it was our expectation, myself and Director Howell, or certainly have him speak for himself, that the staff would be working to bring back information in form of a staff report for an update and status of recommendations that have come out of this process, which they're engaged in right now. And I'm thinking that staff report would probably be coming back in the December, January timeframe. And Director Howell, please correct me if I've misstated anything, or do you feel that there's something else that needs a different emphasis?
No correction at all. I think you covered it really well. I just wanted to kind of mention the, in our meeting today with Melissa and Ray, I came away with that with a very positive feeling that, and just to mention again that we seem to be entering an era of greater collaboration with the county. And this is something that we probably need to have on a number of areas, not just affordable housing. So I just wanted to reassure the public and the board that it looks like we're beginning to make some inroads or some progress in that area in working so that the district and the county are not at cross purposes.
And I guess I'd take the opportunity to acknowledge there's another area that Mr. D'Anzo has maintained a level of information at his fingertips and has seen the way that needs to be able to work its way through the district information also and the county. So that would be it as far as the Affordable Housing Program report is concerned.
All right. Thank you, Vice President Steidel. And Director Howell, Director Rice, you wish to make a comment?
Actually, it's something I forgot for the CDP committee report. If you don't mind, if you want to take the public comment on this affordable housing report first, that's fine.
Well, thank you very much, Director Rice. So, Osana, we have a member of the public that wishes to speak.
Yes, we have Tina Dickinson. Go ahead, Tina.
Thank you, Asana. Okay, on what Director Vice President Steidel was just reporting on or making comments on, I did attend both the Planning Commission meeting on this item, the general plan for 20 through 2028, and the housing element specifically. I made comments, written and verbal. I then attended the Board of Supervisor meeting on this item this week. And Erlen Singewald was giving the presentation. I took notes, and he did say that that before any implementation, they would be looking at infrastructure, resources, et cetera, before there's a slam dunk on certainly the issues that surround us. But one of the issues that I was concerned about, or two, was the fire, how the vulnerability to fire in this area, Cambria, and evacuation issues. So I know that Chair Brown of the Planning Commission certainly listened to my comments and asked staff to address them. And so this is not just a slam dunk for Cambria by any means. So I would hope that if there's an ad hoc committee on this would be looking at. And of course, Coastal will be definitely involved here. So it's a long process, and we have to see where we're at first, I would think, with how we get along with our CDP before anything else is considered. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Tina. So seeing no more comments from board or staff or the public.
Can I just add that one little part on my CDP?
Sure, and Director Pearson also wishes to make a comment.
Thank you. I just wanted to, this is the reason I'm kind of jumping on top of this. I'm sorry, President Farmer, because it's kind of important, and I can't believe I forgot. So I spoke with Supervisor Gibson on Wednesday about the CDP and some of the issues around Cambria and Coastal that seem to be swirling around, both in reality and in the blogosphere, so to speak, and he wanted me to make sure that I pass along the message that this board can count on him to help set up meetings, to help mediate between county, between Coastal staff and our county staff and our staff, to try and iron out some of the confusion on the Cambria narrative and some of the more harder nuts to crack, I'll put it like that, because some of the things, as Ray was saying, there's some things that would be possible, but they're not feasible for money reasons or what other reasons. So Supervisor Gibson is definitely wants to help support us through this process and help build our relationship to Coastal, and suggested that he's more than happy to help set up the meetings required to kind of get through some of the stickier points. Thank you. I appreciate that, President Farmer.
Thank you once again, Director Rice and Director Pearson.
Yeah, I just have a final report, actually, on the retrofit ad hoc, if you're ready for that.
Right ahead.
Okay, I have a report here that I will pass on to Osana so that she can put it in the minutes, attach it to the minutes of the meeting and stuff. But it's final reports, the middle. The ad hoc committee was set up to look into our current retrofit and inspection process when staff recommended changes to the inspection process with a new form. The board directed the staff at that time to continue with staff doing the verification inspections on all residential and commercial retrofit and resale projects using the new form. However, under the general manager's extended authority to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic, staff inspections ceased beginning April 2020, and retrofit compliance has been exclusively verified via third-party inspection or photographic documentation. This decision was made due to the uncertain duration of the pandemic and the desire to ensure timely retrofits upon close of escrow or prior to building permit finalization. The retrofit inspection data from years past has been entered into the newly created database. Due to the moratorium on new buildings, there is little need to access the data points database for demand offset. Staff recommends that the current points bank system be suspended and reevaluated following an analysis of the remaining retrofit capacity in Cambria, which should happen after as we get the urban water master plan for us done. The CCSD Municipal Code Chapters 4.16 through 4.20 and associated administrative policy need to be revised or rewritten to form a new policy on water conservation and the use of demand offset. The upcoming urban water management plan update will also be integral in determining the future course of the water conservation and retrofit program. In the interim, staff will need to bring forward a report to assist the board in creating a timeline and framework for updates to the current program. And that will be happening, I'm sure, early next year in the first quarter, I would imagine. So that's our final report from that ad hoc committee. I imagine that at some point, the new board will appoint a new ad hoc to work with staff to update those sections. But I think for now, they need to be put on hold until more information is gained from the urban water management plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Pearson. That was a very thorough report on what happened with the retrofit program and the ad hoc committee. So thank you very much. And we look forward to further information being gleaned early next year with regard to this. Director Rice, you wish to make a comment again?
Yes. Who was that? Was there another member on the ad hoc committee?
Yes.
Thank you. I didn't know who else. So I'm looking to Tim for his direction on this, but it seems to me that I wouldn't want to have something in the minutes that I haven't read. If I were a board member having to approve those minutes, if I haven't, like, I appreciate the recommendation. Maybe we can bring it forward as a staff report or something. I mean, I'm a little. Just having the staff report put into the minutes, what's the best way to transmit this information forward? Because there's good recommendations from the ad hoc committee, but they can't be taken up today. So what's the best way to make sure those recommendations get moved forward?
Well, it shouldn't be a part of the minutes, but it should be a part of the record of this meeting.
So maybe for future agenda item, I request that item come back for board consideration, or?
That makes sense.
Did you have a different suggestion, Cindy?
Well, I'm thinking that probably when we start looking at the ad hoc committee formations, mm-hmm. That this information be provided to that ad hoc committee, and that at that point in time, there may be other things. I mean, some of these were recommendations that were coming forward from staff as well. So
maybe this is the report, but the final action of the ad hoc committee would be, I don't know, to take some action or something. So we don't, so this is actually not the final task of this ad hoc. I don't know if that makes sense. Cause if we're going to create, if we're going to just appoint somebody to the ad hoc committee, even if it's not the same two people, if it's the same committee with the same task.
That would probably be the case, and maybe part of the conversation is to understand whether it would be the same task.
Okay.
So,
reviewing what the task was that was given to the ad hoc to see if that's been fulfilled. I just don't want this information to get lost, and I don't think it's appropriate for the minutes, so that's why I just kind of made a spectacle. Now we have at least the recording of the conversation.
Thank you for your effort.
The ad hoc committee was basically tasked with looking at the process for verifying the retrofit points and since that was the new form that came out and everything. But now what we're kind of recommending is that the new ad hoc committee would be looking at a new program of water conservation, a new retrofit points program, and revising 4.16 through 4.20. And so it's going to be an entirely new tasking for that new ad hoc.
Okay. Okay. But that gives us the outline of what that ad hoc would be tasked with. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. That's good clarity for me, at least.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that, Director Pearson.
Well, thank you also. No doubt with regard to this item, we will be bringing it back, let's say, early next year as an agenda item for further board and staff discussion. So thank you all. We have some liaison reports here, and so I'm going to be giving three of them because I filled in for Director Pearson at the NCAC meeting while he was out of town. And then I have my president's report, which I'll try to ad lib as quickly as possible. So bear with me while I kind of monopolize the stage here for just a short while. So my apologies for that. So first, I want to report on the NCAC meeting that took place this past Wednesday. First, there was a presentation by Jill Coomer, and she's the new supervisor of the Slo County Code Enforcement Department. She previously had 15 years of experience in various aspects of code enforcement. So now she's the chief of this area, this department. So she responded to a question and highlighted the three most problematic issues in Cambria with regard to code enforcement. And those are illegal grading, trees being cut down without a permit, which we all know takes place, and building construction without a permit. So, and obviously we've all seen all of those take place at one point or another. She commented on the fact that camping is becoming more common throughout the county. And of course, we had a couple of incidents with regard to that right here in Cambria in recent months. And that includes fencing being put up unexpectedly. And also these creating, let's say, health and safety issues, which we would all be concerned about, of course. And she also mentioned the common things that are done on vacant lots, which we have here in Cambria. RVs occupied or not being on vacant lots, as well as cars parked there. Both of those are not allowed. Also, there's illegal dumping, which we occasionally see. And unfortunately, somebody does illegal dumping and it becomes the responsibility of the lot owner to remove that. And of course, here in Cambria, a lot of those lot owners live out of town, so they can create a problem. We had a short report from Supervisor Gibson. He thanked Claudia Harmon, who is the head of the Beautify Cambria Association. She's also on the NCAC. She gave a presentation to the Board of Supervisors on Tuesday with regard to making Cambria a dark skies community. And this was positively received by some of the supervisors. Supervisor Gibson also reminded us that we're now back in the entire county is now back in the purple tier, the most serious of the COVID-19 conditions. So he made a comment that most notable with regard to the increase in various age groups, that the highest increase right now is among 18 to 29 year olds. So he encouraged all of us to take great care to limit Thanksgiving gatherings, which is something that's being done throughout the country for that matter. We had a report from Shani Siong from County Planning, and she gave a report on the recent fiscal year of July 2019 through the end of June of 2020. So she commented on the fact that even with the reduced staffing due mostly to retirements at County Planning, they were still able to accept and process 100 land use permits per month and process 275 building permits per month through that entire 12-month period. But she remarked that since the beginning of this current fiscal year, which is on July 1st, County planning is now processing over 400 building permits per month. So that's an increase of 150. And this is mainly due to the fact that there's more remodels and add-ons. A lot of people are moving to the county from out of the area. And so there's more requests for, like I say, remodels and add-ons. It's people, new people moving here and building, you know, buying property. And also she said that the last fiscal year, county planning did over 1,200 building inspections per month. And now in the new fiscal year, it's now 1,400 building inspections per month. So obviously a lot is going on at county planning for the county. Michael McDonough from the healthcare district here in Canberra, he commented on the fact that there were fewer calls for emergency in October than there was in the previous October of 2019. And that the healthcare district the emergency services, I should say, has received a new state-of-the-art defibrillators. So they'll be able to respond and be more, even more prepared for any cardiac emergencies that would take place here in Cambria. And hopefully that will not be happening. There was a report from the Traffic and Transportation Committee and need for an additional red no parking zone at the corner of Main and Cornwall next to the restaurant there. Any of us that have driven there and made that turn, there's usually a car that's parked there. It makes it a little bit awkward for visibility in that area. So hopefully that will be addressed by the county road department. Also, let me see here. We had a business report. Most stores in town, oddly enough, are reporting that they're doing well by both shopping by locals and tourists. There's, of course, with regard to real estate, there are multiple offers on home. So the real estate market is doing well. The bad news is that the overall cost of housing, the buying of homes is increasing. And of course, the overall cost of rentals is going up. So that's a problematic issue. We also had a report from Kitty Connolly, the executive director of FFRP, and she's reminding us that there's going to be a tree planting on the ranch on November 28th, starting at 9 a.m., weather permitting, and it doesn't look like there's going to be any rain a week from tomorrow. They'll be planting 300 to 450 trees. They're encouraging folks to bring gloves, a hand trowel, water, and a mask. With regard to the report from the Fiscalini Ranch, Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, they've done minor rewording to their mission and vision statements. So instead of saying our mission is to protect and sustain the diversity of life and the beauty of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve for everyone, they have replaced our with the corporations. And then with regard to their vision statement, they are replacing our with the corporation's vision as a thriving, everlasting coastal habitat that nurtures wonder and appreciation for generations to come. The office has reopened right there by Sandy's Deli. It's open 3 afternoons a week, Thursday through Saturday, 11 to 2 or 3 o'clock. So they're grateful to be having the office opened again. And as long as conditions remain relatively safe, at least here in our community, it will remain open, but could close again. I don't know, since the conditions around COVID-19 here in the county, there's changes there. So I don't know if what I'm just telling you is true now. FFRP had their recent 20th anniversary fundraiser. They received 123 cash donations of an average of $88. So it was anywhere from $10 to $1,000. So the ultimate monies raised at this very successful fundraiser, by the way, it was just a remarkable production that was put down by so many people. They raised a total of, after income and expenses, $10,000. which is basically a little bit less than what was raised at last year's Kitchen Tour and Wildflower Show. So this 20th anniversary fundraiser was very successful. If you wish to watch the fundraiser yourself, it took about 2 hours with regard to the musical performances, comments on the history of how we saved the ranch and everything. You can go to the FFRP Facebook site, their website, or it's also available on YouTube. You know, Carlos gave a report with regard to dead trees being removed. I think the one thing I want to highlight is the fact that there are actually 3 days of helicopter training on the East Ranch that was coordinated by both the fire department and emergency services. And that was, so that was very successful. Also, the homeless on the ranch continues to increase on CCSD property as well as in your Highway 1. The porta potty and the dumpster are going to be removed. I believe that, General Manager Weigel might have reported on this as well. With regard to the dumpster and the porta potty being removed due to the upcoming rainy season, and also the anticipation of more homeless because people will be moving here from North County because of what is taking place up in Paso Robles. So I don't think I'm going to make any further comments there. With regard to the Cambria Forest Committee, they met recently as well. Bob Fountain, who's been on the green space with green space for a number of years, and he's been the representative to the Forest Committee. He's now been installed as the new director there. There was a number of discussions on various items that I'm going to just kind of pass over here. There was a comment on a three-part Age of Nature PBS series that gives us a very complete overview with regard to our relationship with Mother Earth and our need to live in harmony with her, with regard to the trees and carbon dioxide and what they provide to us and how responsibly we need to be with regard to the trees and nature. There was also a very positive report on the forest clearing that took place, and I believe there was a mention of this yesterday on Burton Drive between Village Lane to the Cambria Nursery, and there were very positive comments with regard to invasive plant removal, including pampas grass and Cape ivy. There were also officer elections. Crosby Schwartz remains the president. Christine Heinrichs is the new vice president. Paul Nugent has assumed the role of secretary, and Laura Schwartz is the treasurer. Also, there was a discussion on the need for a forest ecologist and an arborist, and the remark was made that this shouldn't be limited to just a registered professional forester. So now for my president's report, and I'm going to try to ad-lib that as well as I can. So I just want to make a comment, as we know, with regard to what's happening with regard to COVID, not just here in the county, all over the state, but in the nation, a rapid rise in COVID cases everywhere. And that includes in our county over the past couple of months, a doubling of cases in various cities and communities throughout our county. Yet here in Cambria, the number basically remained in the low to mid 30s during that period of time. Last time I looked a couple of days ago, it is 38. So a relatively small increase here in our community versus just about everywhere else in the county. So I just want to make a comment on, you know, the responsible actions with regard to the residents here in our special community. And just, you know, a tip of the hat to folks wearing masks, being observant and considerate of one another. So just another great reason to be living in Cambria. I'm just kind of removing things as I go along here. I do want to make a comment with regard to the coastal development permit that we've submitted. I just want to state that with regard to at the CDP, that the CDP remarks with regard to the sustainable water facility, I think that we should reconsider renaming with regard to the CDP, renaming it as the Emergency Water Supply Project, as it was initially described in the permit of January of 2014. And so we include in the CDP with the comments such as for existing customers only and not for growth. And I think by changing this to the Emergency Water Supply Project, that there might be a greater likelihood of this CDP ultimately being approved. And also that the emergency water supply facility, I should say, that's now the SWF, the Emergency Water Supply Project, might be a better opportunity for it being approved by both the Planning Commission as well as the the California Coastal Commission. I think with regard to intent to serve letters, maybe that needs to be revisited by the board, see what our legal ramifications are with regard to people on the water wait list. I think the district needs to determine how we responsibly move forward with regard to addressing this problematic situation with regard to the water wait list. And like I say, our obligations and responsibilities to the people on that list. I'm going to make a couple of other comments as well. With regard to the health of the forest here in Cambria, which is such a valuable part of why we live here, why people visit here, I would recommend, and I think this is already being considered, this has already been followed up on Director Pearson, so I just want to further encourage the nonprofit organizations here in our town, the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, the Forest Committee, as well as Green Space, our local land conservancy, and maybe they can work together with the CCSD to help in hiring, like I say, a full-time, knowledgeable, and experienced forest manager and ecologist that certainly has both the best interest of the health of the wooded areas and the well-being of the residents of our community as a major priority. Also, I just want to comment on the fact that moving forward, we really need to focus on the use and reuse of water, which is the precious resource that we have here in our community. We're very blessed, by the way, to have water available to us in close proximity to where we live. Not every town has that here in this county. So I just want to make a comment that just as the district has done in the past, and people have done this, you know, in recent years with regard to putting cisterns and water tanks on their property, but people also in the past have taken rainwater and, you know, put it into 35 to 55 gallon tanks. And we certainly need to do that in this upcoming year, because my take on it is that we're not going to be getting that much rainwater. So we need to do the best we can in that area. Also, I know gray water systems can be problematic, but I think we should be encouraging these, because gray water system, taking water that we use from our bathing and from washing clothes and so forth, using that water and gray water systems to basically water our gardening in the summertime when there's less water available in the wells. This is something that we should be pursuing. Also, with regard to using gray water systems and everything else with regard to cisterns and water tanks, using the water there, that would mean less operation of our water facility to provide us with water. And of course, operating the facility creates pollution through brine waste and disposal, and also would increase the cost of water to the residences and businesses of our town. Also, I want to make a comment that what is most really important in our community is that we just, as we move forward in this decade, that we just become a more environmentally friendly and have a really positive attitude as to how to live in harmony with the natural world that surrounds us. You know, we're so blessed to live here, to call Cambria home. And like I say, our relationship with one another, our relationship with Mother Earth is so very important. And we just have a really meaningful obligation as we shift our consciousness here on the planet to just have, how can I say it, reverence and appreciation and a sense of reverence and respect for Mother Earth. And also just as we move forward, just do the best we can to bring out the best in ourselves, you know, to be deeply caring and imaginative and creative as to how we live on the planet, especially, like I said, in this very magical community here in Cambria. So, you know, I'm going to be moving forward.
Mr. Weigold's had his hand up for a little while.
I was just going to call on the two folks that have their hands up.
So, oh, my bad.
Not a problem. So, General Manager Weigold, you wish to make a comment?
Oh, I was just going to ask if there was an update from the Strategic Planning Ad Hoc Committee to talk about some potential work in December.
Okay, well, I think I had requested people from the various ad hoc committee comments, so I don't know if that's available. Does anyone on the Strategic Planning Ad Hoc Committee wish to make a comment? I believe that's Vice President Steidel and Director Pearson.
Yes, thank you. I'll go ahead and start out, and I'm sure that Director Pearson would probably have some things to offer also. But the reason for bringing this up is that we've been provided with an opportunity with access to the individual we had identified to lead us through some strategic planning to be able to do this before the end of the year. And there are some real benefits to that. It would also take some coordinated effort to make it happen. And that doesn't preclude, I believe, the ability for directors currently leaving from, you know, participating in the process, so they'd have the benefit of their expertise in that also, if this were to happen past the December 10th date, which very well may be the case. But the issue at hand is that we would need to meet to discuss this and look at the alternatives, and if we choose to go forward with it, to be able to set some specific dates to accomplish doing that. So it's just a heads up to recognize that we've got this opportunity and we should probably have a meeting quickly to be able to have the conversation and make a decision about it, which might target that for early part of next week. Director Pearson?
Yeah, let me add a little more clarity. What Marilyn Snyder has been able to do is use the web, and I'm not sure if she's using webinar or Zoom or whatever, but she has developed a methodology that she can actually do this remotely and even have breakout committees, et cetera, et cetera. So here's the opportunity to set the strategic plan and goals for the general manager and the staff for the following year with the new board in place. And I think it would be very worthwhile to go ahead and take this opportunity to do that. What we would need to do is decide today to have a special meeting within the next week or so in order to get her scheduled and on board, and she's available, I believe, the week of the 14th of December, which would kind of fit with the new board just being in place and everything. So I would forward a motion to go ahead and schedule a meeting if we can to get this accomplished.
President Farmer?
I think we're out of order on that.
Yeah, President Farmer, these are just reports. There's no action taken during these reports.
Future agenda item.
Right.
Okay.
All right. So with regard to the, we'll discuss it at a future agenda item. So Director Howe, you wish to make a comment?
Just very briefly. It's Schneider, is that her name, Ms. Schneider? Has she, how much experience has, because before she wasn't doing anything remotely, I'm presuming that she's had some practice with her new methodology. Have you guys, or is there anyone that we can talk to who has worked with her in the new methodology? I have no evidence that she's going to be effective if she was unwilling to do it remotely before. Clearly she's had to in order to maintain her business, but I'd like to hear, so far the only recommendations we have for her are people who were dealing with her when she was working in person. So I would appreciate it if the ad hoc committee could contact her and find and maybe get some names of some organizations that have used her in her new methodology before I'd be willing to commit to this.
General Manager Weigold?
Yes, she spent a considerable amount of resources converting everything for her workshops to the Zoom format, which includes breakout rooms. And she's done about 10 just in the last 2 weeks. So there's plenty of people to get references from.
Good.
Especially good. Existing clients.
Good.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, General Manager Weigold, for being able to answer that question promptly. Director Rice, you wish to make a comment, and then we have a member of the public who wishes to make a remark as well.
Yes, on the president's report, while as an individual Cambrian having the position of submitting a permit for the EWS and not the permit that has been submitted is appropriate, but as board president, it is irresponsible to suggest that we undo things that have been already decided by the board as part of your president's report. If you would like that change to be made, you should make it a future agenda item for the future board so that it can be fully discussed, because there are many reasons why it hasn't been changed either in name or in purpose, and we are still in the process. It is irresponsible as a director to use your platform as president to speak about something that could put obstacles in the way of decisions former boards have made. And the SWF is water reuse. That's what I wanted to say.
Well, my suggestion was that we bring it back to the board and consider, like I said, amending the coastal development permit application and reword SWF into the emergency water supply project. That was essentially my suggestion. My apologies if I was highly irresponsible. That wasn't my intention at all. We have a member of the public that wishes to speak. Sona, would you call on her, please?
Yes, Elizabeth Bettenhausen, go ahead.
Thank you very much. I would want to commend President Farmer for bringing up the whole issue of the inseparability between the work of CCSD board and environmental concerns. I have been applauding the perhaps next president of the United States in that regard, so that the vetting of everybody for that possible administration focuses on how they understand the climate crisis and what specific steps they think need to be taken to address it. So I highly commend President Farmer for bringing this up again, and I look forward to how it's done in the next board of directors of CCSD. And I would hope passionately, actually, that many members of the board, perhaps even all the members of the board, newly elected and reelected, will bring this up no matter what the agenda item is before you. That's an interesting challenge. Can you look at affordable housing, for example? Or let's take a more, I don't have the slightest idea, having just listened to this, and maybe I should have had lunch, but I have no idea why the strategic planning is supposed to be now in December. I didn't get the reason for that, really. But assuming that, I would think that making environmental and ecological justice the focus of your strategic planning for the next 5 years would be highly welcomed by the California Coastal Commission, as well as Supervisor Gibson and others more locally. So have a great lunch, friends. I really appreciate having watched the Board of Supervisors this morning, and you. And I didn't know that policy was this afternoon, but I'll shut up, Mr. Director Howell, if you would tell him that, Mr. President, so that I can get some lunch before I nobly watch the policy, the Standing Committee meeting on policy. Thank you all. You've been diligent today to the tune of hours, and I thank you very much.
Thank you, Elizabeth. So, you know, we now have future agenda items, and then we have something else to do before we adjourn. So let me just ask very quickly, anyone have any suggestion for future agenda items? It looks like, let me just check here. That looks like Ms. Bettenhausen has her hand up still. So, Elizabeth, did you wish to make a future agenda item comment, or you still have your hand up? Okay. Director Pearson?
Yes, I would like to move that we have a special meeting to consider whether to have the strategic planning happen in December.
All right, so I think one of the difficulties next week is that staff is off on Wednesday, so it would have to be Monday or Tuesday. So I don't know if we can decide it that quickly. We might have to wait till the following week.
Yeah, the following week would work. We could do it the Monday the 30th or even December 1st.
Okay. Director Howell, did you want to make a comment on the date, perhaps?
You're muted.
You have to unmute, Don.
Oh, sorry. You guys can't do telepathy or something? It's a question of order here. If we can put on a future agenda the issue of whether to have a special meeting, but I don't know that we can at this point have a motion to have a special meeting. That's a question to Mr. Carmel, whether that's in order.
I think it's in order.
Oh, okay.
Just to set the special meeting.
Okay.
So I'll amend my motion to have the meeting on November 30th at 10 a.m.
All right, how does everybody feel about that?
That works for me and for the agenda, my timer.
Okay. Well, in case anybody's wondering, that's a day of the lunar eclipse, so it should be rather interesting, just on the face of that alone. General Manager Weigold, you missed a wake up. Oh, so this is going to be at what, 10 a.m.?
Yes, sir.
Yes, President Farmer. I know this is a board meeting, but certainly I'd like to attend. I actually have a commitment starting at 12:30 for several hours that afternoon. But even an hour prior to that or hour and a half earlier would be great.
Well, 10 o'clock should give you plenty of time, shouldn't it?
Yeah, hopefully our meeting won't go past 11 o'clock. So that should be, well, I mean, I'm just looking at this one.
We won't be there in that case.
President Farmer?
Yes.
I just wanted to make sure the director-elects probably should be available for that meeting because you'll be setting you're calendaring a date at which they'll be on the board. Right. I just want to sort of throw that out there.
Not sure that that's...
Okay. All right. Well, we'll make sure to connect with Mr. Gray and Ms. Dean. Thank you.
But
wait a minute.
Well, if we're holding this on the 30th, I understand.
Director Howell, you wish to make another comment?
So let me get clarity on this because right now I'm not real friendly to this idea. So what we're to do is to have a special meeting on the 30th to decide whether and when to have a strategic planning meeting. Is that what is the subject?
Yes, we'll go ahead with a web-based strategic planning and to look at dates that could possibly be done.
And so as a board, we would end up this is why I'm having a little problem with this. Without consulting the members elect, even though we do have an existing majority here of the new board, nevertheless, what we're proposing to do then is to schedule a new board as to when they are going to meet and what they're going to talk about. I'm not sure that's really appropriate. I could see meeting and making a recommendation to the new board. But I do realize that it would be very helpful and such in a strategic planning session to have Director Rice and Director Pearson there because we do need the value of that experience. But somehow the timing of this is really bothering me. I mean, obviously, if you vote to do it, I will certainly attend, but I don't feel comfortable with it at this point. I would rather ask simply make a recommendation to the new board. However, I'm only one voice on that, but that's my feelings in the matter.
And I understand your concern and everything. I'm going to go ahead and withdraw my motion. I agree. The new board can go ahead and decide to do this in January or sometime like that. We don't need to rush this. I do have another motion to assure that the affordable housing does come up on the agenda of the new board by the end of January. And I would like that to be voted on so that it actually happens.
All right. All right, so we obviously have two future agenda items to be considered by the new board once they are installed. Director Rice, you wish to make a comment on this subject?
Yes, I think that I would like to make a motion that the board take up consideration of no new connections. That's not letters. That's not intent to serve. That's not permits. But just know we won't connect somebody. They can build their house, but we're not going to connect them at the moment. It's one of my suggestions. Till some other things can get straightened out. We just say, if something comes forward, we're not going to connect them until, I don't know, it gets reviewed or something. I just think that a consideration of moratorium on actual connecting to the system would be a good idea.
Thank you, Director Rice. That was actually part of my president's report that I skipped over. So thank you for bringing that up.
It seems like we have a number of motions on the floor right at the moment.
These are just suggestions for future agenda items.
It was a motion, Harry. It wasn't a suggestion. So I believe there was another motion prior to Amanda's.
Yeah, I motioned that we put on the agenda, the future agenda, no later than January, a discussion of affordable housing.
Second.
Okay. You have a...
I guess that was my misunderstanding. My apologies. We're making a motion with regard to something that's going to be done for the new board in the future with regard to setting up a meeting. Is that what we're doing?
According to bylaws, if we vote on a future agenda item, then it has to happen. Otherwise, if we don't vote, then it's at the discretion of the president.
That wording is actually on the agenda itself. No formal action can be taken except to direct staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda item by majority vote.
Right. So let's see. Oh, so the motion, maybe, Director Steidel, you have your hand up. I'm a little concerned.
Yeah, I appreciate that what Director Pearson is saying, but the problem is that this isn't dependent on the staff. This is dependent on information that they're working with other agencies collaboratively, and they may not be in a position to respond to that at the end of January. I mean, it's entirely possible that that's the case. It's entirely possible that it can be the end of December, but it's something that is just kind of hitting the bricks right now. And so it's an evolving process. It's an active process. And I don't know that committing it in that way is, certainly if it's by board motion and if things just aren't available and it isn't timely, then it can just be reset for February. So.
Yeah.
Director Pearson, you could make it the motion so that it was within the first quarter, at least getting a report out. That gives a little bit of flexibility. No?
Yeah.
Okay. Then I stick with my second to your original motion.
Okay.
All right. To Osana, let me just ask you, do you have the motion that Director Pearson has made?
Regarding affordable housing, then?
Yes.
Is that the one? So he wants to assure affordable housing does come up with the new board by the end of January. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Yes, I do have it.
All right. Thank you, Osana, for being on top of things here.
Thank
much
you.
Much appreciated after just being on the job for like 3 weeks. So can we have a motion and a second? So would you call the roll, please?
Excuse me. Point of order. We need to have discussion. No one has called the question yet. I like to speak in favor of this motion. It is simply a matter of bringing it up. It has nothing to do with any conclusions that might be reached. So I think it's that. And
okay.
I just wanted to mention that. So I just wanted to speak for the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Howell. So not seeing any other comments by members of the board or attendees, could we have a roll call vote, please, Osana?
Yes. Director Pearson.
Aye.
Director Rice.
Aye.
Director Howell.
Aye.
Vice President Steidel.
Aye.
And President Farmer.
Aye. So before I adjourn the meeting, Director Rice and I had spoken before, and I know, I believe Director Rice wishes to make a comment and make a statement. We still have that arrangement, Director Rice? By the way, I see, hold on. Director Howell has both hands up, as does Vice President Steidel have one hand up. So, Director Howell?
Unmute yourself.
Thank you. Thank you, Osana. I believe that Director Rice had a motion that she wished to make following Director Pearson's motion.
I'm fine.
Oh, okay.
I said what I wanted to say. If the board wants to carry it forward, that's their choice.
Wait a minute, Amanda. So the reason I ask you that is I would go ahead and support that. And I'd like to, if you're not going to move it, I would move it. So can we just take it from you?
I move that we agendize a discussion and consideration of no new actual connections. So if somebody has a project they've built, now you probably want to put an exception in there for people's self-help, just saying, but that could bring back all the letters of intent and everything that might be under construction now.
Okay.
So my motion specifically is to bring back not connecting a new customer.
Cool. Okay. I second that motion with the comment that it doesn't mean that we necessarily have to do that, but we certainly need to bring it up and discuss it as soon as possible. Could I ask for an amendment that we actually put a time frame on this, perhaps by the end of January, if you're agreeable, Director Rice?
I'd like to, January would be great. I'd kind of prefer to give some flexibility in the first quarter, but I defer to you since you'll be continuing on the board. I don't have an issue with having it be January. I'm just trying to give a little bit of wiggle room for scheduling.
Well, how about February then?
I agree to that amendment, February.
So,
and thank you for supporting it, Director Howe.
Well, thank you for bringing it up, Director Rice, and the support that you've gotten from Director Howe. Osana, do you have some correct wording with regard to this item?
Yes. So, Rice motioned to move that we agendize discussion that no new actual connections of a new customer be done. Is that correct?
That not a new customer, just no new connections.
So right. No new actual connections, period.
Right. Because you could have an old customer having a new connection.
And you have to put before by February or something in there somewhere.
Right? Time frame by end of February. Okay. Yeah. So agendized discussion that no new actual connections and that it be in the time frame by end of February.
Good.
Okay. I see the Vice President Steidel has her hand up before we vote on this.
The only thing I'd ask additionally is that we have feedback also from Mr. Carmel regarding that to indicate, excuse me, if there would be any risks we should consider in taking that kind of action.
There are many legal issues associated with that action.
It's a gift to you, Tim, on my going away.
I'll send over a new ream of paper, Tim.
And maybe some toilet paper too while we're at it. So normally we're about to adjourn.
But we need to vote, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. Because I'm just getting a little bit spaced out here. This meeting, by the way, we're getting up on 3 hours just to end yesterday's meeting. Vice President Seidel, I see you still have your hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll get that lowered. Okay.
Nothing to be sorry about it. Anybody should be apologizing. It's yours truly for not being as on top of the end of this meeting as I should be. So we have a motion and a second. Thank you, Director Howe. Osuna, if you would take a roll call vote, please.
Yes, I think it started with Rice. So,
aye.
Director Rice.
Aye.
Director Howell. Aye. You're unmuted. Okay. Let's unmute you.
All right, let's try again. Aye.
All right. Director Pearson.
Aye.
Vice President Steidel.
Aye.
President Farmer.
Aye. So, like I say, Director Rice and I had discussed a week or two ago about Director Rice making a final comment here at the end of this meeting. So, Amanda, let me just ask you, are you prepared to do that? And if so, I want to make a couple of comments before then, and then I'll just hand the floor over to you.
No, I don't. We've had a long enough meeting. I don't need to take up any further time.
Okay. All right, then. So,
President Farmer?
Yes.
I just, in terms of, you know, sorting anything out as far as that strategic planning is concerned, I just wanted to confirm, we were not going to have a special meeting on the 10th, is that correct?
I believe so. I think it was for the 30th, and I believe so.
Oh, excuse me, on the 30th, yeah. So, but the expectation or suggestion is that it would be sometime after the 10th, after the new board is seated?
Correct.
Right. And if it would be, can I jump in for a minute, please?
Go ahead, Director Hall.
Sorry. And we would hope that the ad hoc or someone can, remember we that issue of getting some kind of feedback from the lady's current customer.
Right, yeah. Right, from Maryland, okay. Right. Right, okay. Well, it just for point of reference, I think we've probably resolve the potential of that happening for us in December, and we can just take that off the table because of the timing by pushing that out beyond the 10th. It's my understanding from what Mr. Weigalt had informed us for her availability, so.
Okay.
All right, seeing no further comments that folks want to make, so before I adjourn this meeting, by the way, I just want to make a remark here. Director Rice said that she didn't wish to make a statement because the meeting has gone on so long. And we all can understand and appreciate that. So let me just make this comment that we will be having a proclamation for Director Rice at the first board meeting, or the next board meeting in December when we install the new members of the board. And so Director Pearson stated that he did not want a proclamation of any type. He didn't want any recognition. I just want to make this remark. Director Pearson was appointed to this board in November of 2017. So that was exactly 3 years ago. The contributions that Director Pearson has made to this board, to this district, to the community, in just a brief three-year period, to me, I can't imagine anybody having done as much in as short a period of time as David has, you know, not just being initially the chair of the Finance Committee, being the chair of the R&I Committee, being the board president for 1 year, and just everything that he has contributed with his wealth of knowledge and experience in every way, shape, or form. He's just been, like I say, a real addition to this board. And obviously, we've got new people coming on board in December that'll be serving for 4 years, and they'll do a very competent job. There's no doubt about it. They're very bright people. But the two folks that we're losing, and I just right now, I'm just basically remarking on Director Pearson. David, I just think back to those. David and I, when he was president, I was vice president, we'd meet at least once a month at Lily's and just talk about district stuff and talk about life, some of my fond memories of the first 4 years of being on the board. So, David, I know you didn't want any kind of commendation. I'm trying to make it brief, but I think I speak for everyone in the community, on staff, on the board, and just thank you immensely for everything that you've contributed. And you're going to be missed. That's all I can say.
Well, thank you for your kind comments. and thank all of you. Thank you, staff, for doing a great job, GM Weigold. Thanks especially to Mr. Carmel for keeping us on track all the time. And thanks to all the other members of the board. You guys have been great to work with, very harmoniously. We got along well, and I appreciate that. I would especially like to thank Director Rice for her mentoring and training me on how this all worked and stuff. She was a great help to me all through the 3 years that I served. And I wish you all the best. You'll do a great job. Thanks.
Yes.
I will say, voting to appoint you, David, was one of the very best decisions I made over the 8 years I served on this board. Thank you for serving with me.
Thank you, David. Thank you all for this 2-3 hour meeting today. I don't think anybody anticipated. I just want to thank the contributions of just not the board members, but utilities manager Ray D'Enzo and the members of the community that spoke. And it was a very valuable special meeting that wasn't even a special meeting, just a continuation. So everyone have a blessed weekend. Be grateful for living here in Cambria or wherever you reside. And don't forget to be kind, be careful, be thoughtful, and to wear a mask, and many blessings. This meeting is ended. Thank you very much.
Thank you.